Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba. Welcome to episode 44, and a familiar face. We're bringing back John Boucher, who is a managing director for Lean Horizons Consulting. John, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, thanks, Mark. How are you today?
I'm fine, and I think you and I could probably do 5,000 more episodes on things that you and I regularly talk about. Sometimes John and I get on the phone for 2 hours and just, he's calling me for a 5-minute call, and we end up with 2 hours talking about philosophy and theory and practicality, quite frankly, in terms of how this all works. And we learn from each other. I love talking to John, and hope you'll learn and love listening to John today too. We've already done one on 3P and moonshine. We've already done one yesterday. Did we do it yesterday? I can't remember when we did it
yesterday.
Yeah. And that was on? You don't remember?
Oh, the seven flows of production.
The seven flows of production, which is, by the way, that one there, John, nobody's talking about that out there today. And it's going to be hopefully very popular and helpful for people to think about, right? And by the way, this is related to it. Today, we're going to talk about the poison of metrics. John named that one. I love that name, by the way, the poison of metrics. And he said something to me right before we got started today. He said, poison, a lot of poisons that you can eat. And by the way, anything could be a poison if you eat enough of it, right? Even healthy food. Sure. But poison many times tastes good. But eventually you'll meet your demise if you continue to take it. And so John's view of the world and mine as well is, as we look at how we use metrics in business today, they are, in fact, in a lot of cases, a poison that will drive us down the wrong road. So let's just start right there, John, and I'm going to turn it over to you. You're getting ready for a trip to leave for, where are you going again? Australia,
yeah.
Got a lot of friends in Australia. They are unbelievable people over there. Love that country.
Love it.
And even ate kangaroo, raw kangaroo last time I was there. I hope the animal lovers out there don't get upset with me.
I think I'm just going to stick to fish.
Okay. Well, you can get in trouble there too. But anyway, John, why don't you kick it off?
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Hey, I just feel privileged to be part of the LHC team. And I just love everything that the team is about, the team's view of Lean. And I think the real secret here is we have the same teachers.
Right.
And so there's no confusion about what the Toyota production system is or what Lean is or how we are practitioners. And it just makes it very exciting for all of our dialogues.
And by the way, our senseis, though, we're the guys that were Taiichi Ono's direct lieutenants when they developed the Toyota production system.
So team.
We're not learning it from, you can call them consultants if you want. I don't think they think of themselves that way. But, Iwata, Nakao, Niwa, Nino, right. Takanaka, some of them are not with us anymore. And these are the guys that we learned right, if you will, from the horse's mouth, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, it wasn't easy, but worth it. Here we are decades later, and we've helped a lot of people. We see things with clarity, and we're able to help more people. So we were talking about metrics, and I can't think of that topic without thinking back on past situations, and I'm sure you do too. So one of the things that I did in preparation for this dialogue was I just thought about all the cases where I was either coaching a team or with the core team when we were putting a plan together, maybe a battle, fixing something. And we're talking about metrics and how they would get in the way. So what I did is I made a list of what I call categories of metrics. And maybe what I can do is just kind of go down that list of categories of metrics, and then that'll serve as a jumping off point for our dialogue. And we can talk a little bit about some examples and why we have these categories. So, Mark, I think these are not in priority,
Sure.
but leading the list is metrics that make things worse. So when I talk about metrics that make things worse, it's really sub-optimized metrics usually make things worse. So as an example, and I'll try to give an example of each and we can come back to these, but an example of that would be, let's take sourcing. And a lot of times sourcing is charged to find suppliers with a lower cost. That's sub-optimized thinking. And quite often what'll happen is you'll get parts with a lower cost and you'll sacrifice quality and delivery, but somebody meets their metric. So another category would be metrics that are driven by absorption accounting. And that's your area of expertise, I know, and I'm sure we'll come back to that one. Another one, let's call it competing metrics. So competing metrics would be, let's say it's functional silos.
Yep.
So I'm engineering, I'm sourcing, I'm this, I'm that, and everybody has their siloed metrics, and they're really looking out for themselves. And I think in the worst case, you might find leaders that will try to enrich themselves through siloed metrics at the expense of the bigger picture. Also, kind of a fun category here. There's probably a lot of names for this one. I call it feed the beast metrics. Metrics that everybody thinks are BS, everybody. They'll tell you when you see them at lunch, I don't know why we report that, but they still do because somewhere in the food chain, somebody wants to see that metric. So feed the beast metrics, not healthy at all. Category, I struggled with the name of this, so I'll just read my bullet and then there's three sub-bullets to this. But it's metrics that exist as a product of lack of situational awareness and or lack of applied critical thinking skills. And so just maybe subcategories of that, let's call it groupthink metrics. Why do you measure this? Don't know. The person I replaced measured it. That guy measures it. This guy measures it. That's why I do it. Another subset of this is what I would call personality-driven metrics. So somebody gets a job and they want to make their mark on the world, or they just have a very strong view and they come up with their own metrics without really asking a peer group or another function or even their own employees if it makes sense. Then there's another category that I call mimic metrics, mimic metrics. Why do you measure it? I don't know. That shop over there measures the same thing, so that's why I measure it. So another category is, and we can talk about this later, and I'll give a little bit of a segue here, is statistics disguised as metrics. And you and I are both baseball fans, and maybe we can talk a little bit about baseball on how many different ways baseball, the game, and the players are measured. And it's really akin to how many ways manufacturing is measured. I think you and I might agree that in terms of all functions, manufacturing is the easiest to measure and the most measured, especially compared to other functions like engineering or, say, marketing and sales. Another category, and this is the last bullet that I have, I'll call it disassociated metrics. A subset of that is a proxy metric. A lot of times, you might want to measure B, but A is easier. And then you'll have your finance guy at the end of the month figure out how your measure on A connects to B, like a proxy metric. And that's my list of general categories of metrics when I think about it, Mark.
I like it. You know, a couple of thoughts came to mind here. And I know we're going to talk about examples and all that. On the metrics that make things worse, you mentioned purchasing, okay? You mentioned purchase price variance, which, by the way, when I developed lean accounting in 1989, and I am somehow known as the father of lean accounting. That's one of the measures I threw out because,
yeah.
And it's funny, you said something interesting, John. You said the goal is to find low cost suppliers. Now, when I buy 50,000 units when I only need 10,000 because I now got a lower price, is that really a low cost supplier?
That's right,
No,
Mark. We
no.
both know the answer to that. No.
Yeah, okay. But I got a low price.
So
But I
somebody's metric
compromised.
looked okay.
Yeah, well, I compromised everything. And I'll give you another example. And I put this in the category of the other two forms of waste, Mira and Miri, but which is unevenness and unreasonableness, if you will,
The burden.
or overburdening, right? Had a client, and this is a true story. The last 2 days of the quarter, they got 30% of their orders for that month. Now, this company was trying to do level loaded, high junk level scheduling. We had them on. We had standard work set up, one piece flow. We had all the things that, no, they weren't perfect at it, but they were trying to do that. Then all of a sudden, out of the blue, these orders pop up. Well, what did they do? They went to their customers, discounted the hell out of the product, and incentivized their customers to take product early that they didn't need. So right there, they broke what philosophy? Just in time. Okay. Then what happened was the plant tried to scramble and get these orders out, which, by the way, they didn't do. But the sales guys got their commissions because their commission schedule was based on orders, not shipments. So now you had one part of the company working to level load and hit your on-time delivery commitments and to request date. And all of a sudden, before you know it, you made the guy at the customer, the purchasing guy at the customer, a hero because he got a low price. You just now burden your company, and the sales guys got their bonuses and their cruises and their vacations. The sales function won, the company lost. And one
That's right.
simple little thing would have been, hey, change the comp system to be based on orders, not on shipments. Okay. Now we could do puts and calls if the orders don't ship, but don't ask a customer to take something they don't need. That's violation of just in time. So that's one example. The other one was a non-manufacturing example, John. This group think thing that you talked about, right? I was at a doctor one time and there's really no reason they needed to check my blood pressure for what I was there for. But the girl comes in and she checks my blood pressure. And on that particular day, it happened to be rather high. It usually isn't. She goes, oh, it's pretty high today. It's 145 over whatever. I said, oh, okay. So she writes it down. And I said, well, what are you going to do with that? Oh, we put it in your chart. I go, but it's high, right? He goes, yeah. So why do you check my blood pressure? Oh, we want to find out what it is. Okay, now that you know, what are you going to do about it? It's abnormal, right? Well, we just log it in your chart so we have it for our records. Okay. So this is an example. I don't know. Is that mimic metrics, maybe? I don't know. Is an example of they're just doing it. They're going through and they're playing doctor. It's like fake lean, John. It's
So,
fake medical practice.
Mark, in that situation, when I think about it, it's not actionable. And I think what you were driving for is, well, what action is going to come from measuring that? And if
Yeah.
they don't take action, then it goes to the dustbin, and I just call it a statistic, which doesn't help you. I'm sure we'll talk about
No.
that in a few minutes. It's a
And by the
statistic.
way, I was so upset, my blood pressure even went up after
There you
that.
go. That's right.
Anyway, sorry, I just wanted to
Well, that's a great example. That's a great
throw
example. I think that maybe we also can touch on the behavioral piece of this because so much of this is behavior based.
that in. Right.
Look, we come from big companies. We've worked with big and small companies. All these companies spend almost an inordinate amount of resources developing strategies, developing their tactical plans, you name it. We could talk for 5 minutes about that. Almost nobody ever takes the time to align the actions that they're going to take with how they're going to measure it and make sure that the two are, you use a good word, congruent.
Right.
Almost nobody does that. And I find it puzzling. Why would you not do that? I don't know.
I hope you're not looking for an answer from me.
No, I mean, it's a rhetorical question, of
I
course.
mean, it is mind-boggling, right?
So to me, when I start to think about metrics and I think about my annual plans and all my former teams, there's no part of that plan that does not have the associated metric. And what I like to do is all my metrics are team-based. Yeah, I might have some ideas. My team might have some ideas, but we're in a room just like you do in a Kaizen to agree on what a layout might be or fill the blank in. It's the same thing on metrics. Can we agree not just on how we're going to measure ourselves, but where does the information come from? What's the veracity of the data to make sure we don't argue about that? And this is a downside of Six Sigma, you might agree with me on, but also the frequency. Just all those pieces of the metrics that almost nobody seems to talk about.
Well, John, excuse me, the ill-intended consequences of metrics really, or as we described it and you described it, was poison, right? One of the other examples, I had a client who their production was contingent upon equipment uptime, and the equipment in this case happened to be big dump trucks, and walked to their Gemba board, and they're given their morning review, and they were measuring productivity coming out of those trucks. And the guy happened to mention, he said, "Yeah, one of the problems we have is our fuel injectors on our engines are being comprom you know are failing on us." So I said, "Well, do you have data on that?" "Well, no." "Okay, I mean, like what truck, what engine, what fuel injector, what supplier, and all that." Anyway, after we went through some problem-solving Kaizens, we found this. Another function in that company was, in fact, charged with coming up with the low cost for parts. So they bought these third-party parts from China. They weren't OEM parts, number one. And those are the ones that were failing. Number two, in order to get discounts, they would ask the supplier to make it in large quantities. So now the supplier is making all of injector A and not making B, C, D, and E. Meanwhile, they're stocked out of B, C, D, and E. Why? Because they actually consume capacity at the supplier.
That's right.
Okay, they dominated capacity because they bought in such a way that stole capacity from their other part numbers. Now you got stock outs and you got excess parts and you got crappy quality. Okay, so all three of those things were based on the fact that that one department was incentivized based on cost, and the other department was based on output and uptime and availability. They had a nice electronic board that tracked the stock outages. I said, "You guys just institutionalize this. That board alone tells me that you're expecting this to be a normal situation." And the bureaucracy in this particular company was so great that they probably were right about that, okay? Which they shouldn't have been, but. And so I want to go back to your team-based metrics. Had that group that was part of incentivized that bought the parts, along with uptime and along with output and along with availability of parts, this wouldn't have happened.
That's right.
Okay.
Mark, that's right. I think that you made me think, maybe even in that example, but you and I probably have a lot of examples. When we talk about the metrics, we talk about if we were to maybe delineate metrics a little bit, what are you going to measure But we should also talk about who's going to own that metric. So one of the things that I'm used to seeing is this concept of metric flow down. So you and I know we would like to do the Hoshin plan every year. You refresh it, you talk about metrics. Then when it doesn't happen that way, the new manage by objective comes out, let's say in January. Let's just make it simple. Manage by objectives. Okay, we want to ship this much. We want this, we want that. And what'll happen is the leader won't take time to understand who on the team owns which metrics. So you get this flow down. If you think in terms of Y is a function of X, a lot of these metrics are outcome metrics, the Ys.
Lagging indicators.
Ship a zillion, exactly, ship a zillion dollars. So to me, the big boss can hold the Ys, but all the people making things happen have to own the X's. So you've got to understand that relationship of not just the output metrics, but what are the input metrics and where in the organization are those input metrics and who owns them and how does that flow down? I think that's very important.
Well, who owns them? Okay. John, you just hit on something. Heard this parable, if you will, a number of years ago. If you have a village that has 100 people in it, and there's one cow in that village, and that cow is essential for the survival of that village, they're going to get milk and cheese and everything else from that cow, right? And the village, the 100 people in the village all agreed together that we're going to take care of this cow. We're going to feed it, and all that. In 2 weeks, the cow will be dead because nobody is accountable. It's everybody else's job. I'm thinking the other 99, somebody in those 99 people are going to take care of this cow. So I ain't going to do it. Okay. I'm not accountable. I'm not held accountable. Okay. The cow's going to be dead. Now, maybe they'll have some good steaks and that will be short lived because then you have nothing left after it's gone. Okay. But think about that.
Sure.
That's what
That
would happen. That cow would die.
that's what would happen. So I know we're talking about metrics, but you can't have that dialogue about who will own them. To me, three pieces. It's the what, the who, and then the element of timing, the frequency.
Right.
And so if I'm somebody, let's say I'm an entry-level leader and I have a manufacturing line that's mine. So I might be responsible for daily output or output by shift. And what you see to me, those X's also have increased frequency associated with them. And so it might be measured by the hour, by the shift, by the day.
Right.
And the big boss doesn't necessarily have to see that frequency. So to me, it's always important to understand these relationships, X's and Y's. What is it? Who owns it? And then the frequency on how that data gets refreshed or how you take action on which way the metric is going.
And the more frequent, the more you can control the process
Exactly.
and understand really what's going on.
Exactly. Yep. And the more frequent, it's a feedback loop, right? The more frequent that feedback loop, the easier it is to make small corrections. And then the chances that you hit your output are higher than a less frequent check-in.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I always said this about accounting being coming from the financial world originally. A closing your books and, creating monthly financial statements is a quality control check. It happens 12 times a year. Okay. If we're really thinking about it correctly, we should be able to theoretically, and this is maybe more theoretical, not practical, but I like to throw this out there in this regard. We should be able to close our books every second.
There you go. Right. Or every day. In
Okay.
practicality, right? Every day.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but
Yeah,
you think about
sure.
it. You should be able to, why 12 times? That's a batch operation, okay?
That's right.
And accounting, traditional accounting is batch, okay? Why can't we have those understanding of our financial position, okay, even once a week? By the way, my little consulting company, as you know, John, I get 52 P&L balance sheets a year. Every week I get one, okay?
Right.
Now, My business is simple. Okay. It's not all that complex. Okay. But regardless, though, I know my cash position anytime I want it. And that's the most important thing being an entrepreneur is your cash position. I know what that I can get that anytime. And so, we have this batch mentality in accounting that, hey, we're going to close the books every month. Well, why every month? Why not twice a year?
That's right, Mark. Yep. Why? Because this is basically understanding inputs and outputs.
Right.
It's a big T account, right? It's a
Oh, now you're getting
big T
scary.
account.
An engineer talking about T accounts, John. You better
That's
back
as
off,
far
man.
as I go on
You better
finance, Mark.
back off, buddy. That's like me getting involved in engineering, right? No, seriously though, it is true. It is true. And so, these metrics, and the lack of accountability is real key. And I love what you said about team-based because that's exactly how we set up our strategy deployment. It's a multifunctional team. Everybody's responsible for the same. More importantly, they're responsible for the process that gets the results.
There you go.
Okay. That's
That's
the
right.
key,
That's
right?
right. Yep.
All the indicators, the targets, if you will, are just telling you that you're doing the right thing, as long as it's sustainable and all that, and you can see a correlation. Because one of the other things is many times we have a disassociation with, I think you talked about this, with the metric and the causation and correlation. Because if I said to you, hey, John, 100% of all auto accidents last year involved cars with black tires. So the conclusion, of course, is never drive a car
The
with
black tires are causing it,
black tires. Yeah. Okay. Now, what's wrong with that? Did I lie? Is that statistic wrong? No.
No.
Somebody's going to call in and say, oh, I have a bicycle, a motorbike that has white tires, and I got in an accident last year. Oh, okay, geez. But you see what
And
I'm
I
saying? That's
think
a
that's
true statement, but it's so misleading.
it's a great case for disassociation. That's right.
Right.
And
Correlation,
that
causation.
Yes, a absolutely, Mark. A absolutely. Hey, you made me think of something else. Metric proliferation.
Oh my
And
God.
so, another big part of the problem is the number never goes down. It's almost like the US government with regulations. The number is never going to go down, it just keeps moving in one direction. And it becomes a nightmare to manage. So one of the things that I did, I'm going back to like 2001 for my prior employer. Every week, I don't think we needed that frequency, but this is how we did it. Every week, part of our Friday afternoon dialogue would be, is there anything that we need to sunset? And so metric sunsets are something we talk about very often.
I love
And
it.
one of the reasons I talked about metric sunsets is this is when I was driving a lot of change in the business at this point in time. So putting a lot of new metrics in, and look, you've got to be open-minded. If something's not working, I was always willing to listen to the team tell me, this isn't right, John. We use the word kill, but you sunset it. You got to take it out. And so I think over time, what we were moving toward, and I changed jobs before we got there, we were moving toward a core set of metrics that were both X's and Y's, associated owners and frequencies that you could put on one page for a shop that shipped over 700 million a year.
Awesome. And what does that provide? Focus.
Focus. So you're back to the notion of Hoshin. Right. So one of the ways I think about Hoshin, I'm sure you do too. I'll just throw this out. Yes, Hoshin talks about what you're going to do. Equal weight on what you will no longer do.
Bingo.
Equal weight.
Bingo.
And of course,
Bingo.
that's where I got that concept. I just happen to call it sunset. Let's take this out.
Bingo. I love that, John. And the other thing, we talk about process-based, results-oriented processes. Okay. You used the word MBO before. In my MBA, I had a professor who was the father of MBO. And I learned MBO in my MBA class, in my graduate class. And I thought it was the greatest thing in the world since Sliced bread. Okay. As I learned Hoshin, I started understanding MBO was so dangerous.
Another
And
poison.
you have a saying that says, "Tell me how you measure me, and I'll show you how I'll behave." Okay.
Isn't that
Give me
something?
a
Right.
number. I will get that number, John. You get it to me. I'll get it. I will compromise the hell out of the organization, but I'll get that number. Okay. And I'll get my bonus. Okay. And then
That's
after
right.
January 1st starts, it's a new MBO metric, and the other one can go to hell.
Yep. And you'll as a leader, you'll find a way to enrich yourself. Hey, that's a phrase that I know in my notes. I have it italicized. Tell me how you measure me, and I'll show you how I'll behave.
Yep.
All the more reason to make sure, let's say in January, everything is aligned so you don't have any monkey business going on. Monkey business.
Let's not pick on the monkeys, okay? Well, it's interesting because you also mentioned Hosen and X and Y's and all that. You know,
Yeah.
one of the things that we are adamant about on Hoshin, or what we call strategy deployment, is the anatomy of a metric. Okay, and the way it works is verb, noun, from, to, by, a date. So let me give you an example. Verb, increase. The noun, market share from 20% to 30% by such and such a date. That's the anatomy of a metric. Now, by the way, just because you satisfy the requirements for an anatomy doesn't mean that's a good metric. Okay.
Exactly.
Right.
Love that notion. I love that notion.
Yep.
Yeah. It'd be like that. What's that game, Mad Libs? I know people in other countries might
Yeah.
not know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But
it turns into something like that. Yep.
if it's not in that format, it's a bad metric right out of the box.
For
How
sure.
does that grab you?
For sure. Mark, since you're in definition mode, one of the things that you and I discussed is, so you've got the anatomy of a metric.
Right.
What if we then talk about maybe the anatomy or definition of a KPI,
Okay.
anatomy and definition of a TTI? These are terms that are always thrown around, and it's pretty
Again,
hard to find them.
TTI for you guys out there is targets to improve. And keep KPI, key performance indicators. Just so if some people listening that are new to this, but that's what John means by KPI and TTI. Go ahead, John.
No, go ahead. So
No.
KPI. So I think so, Mark, maybe I'll throw it your way in this fashion. Almost anytime somebody wants to measure something, they automatically call it a KPI.
Right.
So take it from there. So what's wrong with that?
Well, first thing is it indicative of a performance? Number one, I mean, KPI, I mean, the middle word there is P, right? Performance. Okay. And is it an indicator? We go back to this whole notion of lagging and leading indicators. So let's just use a very simple example. And I talk about this on a previous episode. If I want to lose weight, let's say I want to go from 200 pounds to 180 pounds. So is weight my KPI? Is that really a performance indicator? I don't know. Now, what if I say, well, wait a minute, my leading indicators are going to be things like calories, minutes of exercise, how much I sleep, nutrition, all that good stuff, right? Content of my nutrition, fats, carbohydrates, and all that protein. Okay. Those are all KPIs. I'm sorry. Those are all leading indicators that if those are the right ones, then I should see my weight move in the right direction. Okay, if I haven't calibrated correctly, that's the other thing. However, what if I hit all my targets? Let's say they're calibrated properly, and let's say I'm green. I hit every one of them every day, every month, every week, whatever. Okay, but my weight's going up. What could that mean? Well, maybe I'm missing a key leading indicator. Maybe I'm not counting my alcohol consumption. I'm drinking a gallon of hard liquor every night. Or two bottles of wine, but I don't count that now. Well, maybe I would count it in calories, but you see what I'm saying? We could be fooling ourselves here by having the wrong leading indicators. Okay. But if my top measure, in this case, weight, which is a lagging indicator, isn't moving in the right direction and all my other ones are favorable, then I got the wrong leading indicators, or I'm missing a key leading indicator to that's critical to the process, right?
I was hoping you were going to use that example. It's one that everybody can relate to. And so staring at the scale isn't going to help you do anything.
No.
And being fixated on where that needle is it on 224 or 221? It isn't going to help anything. Yeah.
Every time my scale gives me a wrong number, I just blame it on a bad gauge R&R.
Oh,
Can't be
boy.
me, John. It can't be me.
We go down a Six Sigma bunny hole on that one.
Exactly.
So, Mark, I think the construct to both you and I, when you're doing your annual plan, when it's done right and done well, this is all part of the dialogue. Okay, somebody wants to measure that. Is it leading or lagging? Is it an input or an output?
Right.
What type
X and
of
Y.
time delay would we see between the two? How do we associate these with cause and effect? Absolutely, that should be the robust dialogue.
And John, you alluded to it earlier. Have the courage to make changes to these things if they're not the
Yeah.
right ones.
Yeah.
And listen, because you're not always going to get it right.
Nope.
I mean, you know that. You set metrics before and you changed them. I set metrics before thinking they were the best ones out there. And then, 2 months into it, I said, you know what? These are the wrong metrics. We got to have the courage to change them if they're driving the wrong behaviors and not helping you solve the
Yeah.
problem or work on the right things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I think that's great. Hey, so we've been talking about metrics. Maybe I just turn this around a little bit. Metrics that should be there but never are. Missing metrics. I have one. And you can already tell maybe by my tone and tenor that it's bothered me my whole career. In machine shops, especially.
Sure.
Not many things take more capacity from you than setups do. Tell you what, I challenge anybody to show me a shop that measures setups as a KPI. Why? Has that been your
John,
experience too?
the only time I've seen it done,
Yep.
and as a caveat to this, the only time I've seen it done is after we would get done with a changeover, Kaizen, a SMET Kaizen.
Yep.
We insist on putting the changeover time on the machine itself so it's visible to everybody. Okay. And of course, if our standard says that we should change over in 10 minutes and it turned out to be 45 minutes, we need to then investigate why and fix the root cause. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Fine. That's the only time I've seen it. Now, on that particular Kaizen, if I went back to it 3 months later, that chart's gone.
And they're probably
It's
not doing
gone.
the frequency of changeovers that
They're
you
not doing the
agreed on.
standard work. We had one client that said our changeover team was a two-man show to do it in 15 minutes, and we were reviewing them 1 month, and their changeover was something like 3 hours. Okay. We couldn't figure out why. Finally came out was they pulled an operator because they wanted to improve their productivity. And it's like, well, how did that work for you? Okay. So they didn't follow the standard. And so their measure went to 3 hours instead of the 10 or 15 minutes that it was supposed to be. So,
Yeah, that's right.
okay.
That's right. And
But
I,
they really impacted productivity, let me tell you, but not in the way they thought they were going to.
oh, for sure, Mark. I've seen that example as well. And I think a lot of this becomes behavioral. So for people that are listening to this and watching us have this dialogue, look, I challenge you. You should think about your shop and just think about why is this not the case? This is not special cause variation, Mark, like a machine breaking down. This
No.
is something that is going to happen every day somewhere in your shop. Every single day, there's going to be a setup or a changeover, right? And it takes more capacity than any single thing that happens in that shop.
Well,
So,
it's the biggest thing, and I agree with you, John. And now let's talk about a metric called OEE.
yeah. So that's OEE is the equipment
Operational
uptime.
equipment effectiveness, okay? And it measures a bunch of things, but one of the biggest drivers to get a favorable OEE is that the machine's not shut down, okay? Equipment downtime. Now, what causes downtime? Equipment failure, okay? Lack of parts, setup.
Right.
Where's the incentive
That's
to do
right.
more changeovers? In lean, we want to do more changeovers. Why do we want to do that? Because customers don't order the way we decide to manufacture
Right.
and produce. They don't order all A's the first 3 days of the week. They're ordering A, B, C, D, and E. Okay. So we've got to be able to frequently change over more often. So, in order to match our production schedule with our demand schedule, and the effects on that besides cost is you're going to drive your lead times down and you can drive your working capital down. And ideally, because you're going to really focus on this with changeover, you're going to drive your quality to be more favorable. Okay. So OEE is a measure that I never like because it's very similar, John, to absorption accounting, where the notion is make more, it don't matter what you make, but your profits are going to look good if you put a lot of stuff in inventory.
That's
Okay.
right, Mark. So Mark, I'd like to connect this to maybe one of our earlier podcasts, is because let's say somebody doesn't measure setup, they optimize this, they run a lot of A's, the machines have to be running, so they make a lot of A's. This
Right.
notion that waste asks for more waste. So now you made more A's than the customer wanted. You have to put them someplace, you have to babysit them. You have systems to track them, on and on it goes. And that's that whole concept of waste asks for more waste that nobody can really measure. How do you measure the philosophical point of waste asks for waste?
You know, that's an episode by itself.
It is.
You know, it really is. I mean, that's a, yeah.
And so I have another one that'll relate to the absorption accounting. And so we talked about disassociated metrics. So my previous employer was a big company, a lot of different businesses inside a big company. So I worked in a lot of the different businesses, and I got to see variation on the culture, which I thought was healthy. But one of the things I saw is that some of the businesses had a very strong metric that was almost always at the top of the list on generating labor hours.
Right.
And so driven solely by absorption accounting. Now, Mark, you and I maybe can spend a few minutes on the poison of this. So, one, when I say disassociated, measuring labor hours has nothing to do with what your customer ordered, what you make, what you pack, what you ship, what you sell. Nothing to do with any of that. So it's certainly not customer facing. And I don't even know if it's business facing because it'll put you at odds with productivity, which is what something that somebody wants to measure every second of the day. And so if you want to maximize your labor hours and a lean guy comes along and does process improvement to lower the labor hours, all of a sudden you've got these competing metrics.
Happens all the time, you know.
All the time.
It always puzzles me, John. You mentioned productivity. There's
Yeah.
companies that have, of the total product cost, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10, 11% of their cost is labor, and they put so much time
Yeah.
into managing labor, not knowing that
Yeah.
productivity is a lagging indicator reflective of how good your processes are
Yeah.
or how bad they are, right? And if they just took the amount of time spent on focusing on that and put it into quality, their productivity will go through the roof.
Yeah. Mark,
I mean,
with
remember what
you.
Deming
Yeah.
said, John. Deming said, those companies who focus on cost will diminish their quality. I'm paraphrasing. The companies that focus on quality will have improved quality and improved costs.
Both, not, yeah, not,
Both.
Or, right. And,
And,
yeah,
the
yes.
genius of the and the tyranny of the or, remember that? And so,
Yeah.
and it's incredible. Another example, and I've talked about this before on different episodes, is I had a client, the real life case study. They had several plants, and we're down in one of their plants in the south, and I'm walking the plant floor with the CEO of the whole company and the CFO. And as we're walking through this plant, I asked them one simple question: how do you pay your people here? What incentivizes them?
Excuse
And
me.
they said, we pay them on machine uptime. Really? Oh, that's interesting. Why do you do that? Well, we paid a lot of money for this equipment and we want to make sure we get a return on investment,
Yep.
ROI. Oh,
Yep.
okay. Now, just what you said, they were producing all of A's, not B, C's, and E's. So they're producing excess inventory. It was become obsolescence. Orders were changed. They're missing deliveries. Customers are canceling orders because they couldn't fill the whole complement of the order. It had such dire effects. So I said to the chief financial officer, so let me ask you a question. I said, so you want to get your money's worth out of these equipment. So you got to run it, right? Yeah. That's the thought. He forgot about the concept called sunk cost in accounting, but we won't get into that. And so then I said, well, this guy had just happened to buy a brand new Lexus. Okay. He's told me about it the other day. I said, hey, by the way, you just bought a new car, right? He goes, yeah. I said, you paid a lot of money for that too, right? Yep. And I said, well, it's a good car, right? I mean, good resale value and all that. Yeah, it's a great car. Okay. So when you get home tonight, are you going to take that car and run it around the block a couple hundred times just to get utilization out of it? He said, well, why would I do that? I don't know. I'm asking you because
Why do you do it at work?
you're doing
Right.
it here.
Right.
He goes, I never thought about it that way. And I said to him, I said, look, I never saw anybody go to a bank teller and deposit ROI. Okay? Never. Who the hell cares? Look, I'm not saying be dumb with your equipment. Don't get me wrong. Okay? But you can't you're killing the business. This one metric was killing. Not only weren't they changing over, they weren't doing any preventive maintenance at all on the equipment, so it was breaking down anyway. Okay? So it's unbelievable how one measure can submarine a business.
Mark, it's so true. And a lot of times, I don't know this situation, but a lot of times, one measure might also have been what I call a personality-based metric,
Yep.
meaning one person that had a big job said, I'm going to measure it this way without aligning other functions.
And then
So
that
it's their
person leaves and they're
personality
still doing it.
imposed on the
And that
business.
person leaves and they're still doing it. I have a real case study here where it was a blow molding operation. I won't take a lot of time on this one, but I've told this story before. And it was a brand new acquisition for Danaher. And I walked through and they had all this inventory piled up of these big truck boxes, blow molded. And I said, why do we have all these boxes stacked up? And well, when it comes off the mold, it has to cure for 48 hours. And I challenged him on that. I said, can it do 47? Yeah, we can. Okay, great. How about 46? How about 45? I'm not going to stop until you tell me to stop. Well, he didn't have any standards. They claimed they did it first. And they came back and I made him do a study. A couple of days later, they came back and they found out it was 20 minutes, not 20 hours. At first, they said 20 minutes. Okay, not 48 hours. And as a matter of fact, hot boxes stacked on top of hot boxes were causing defects down below. Okay, so because of the weight, and so that metric, John, 48 hours, I mean, that practice was put in by a plant manager 10 years earlier,
There you
and
go.
nobody challenged it. He was gone. He wasn't there anymore. Nobody challenged it, John.
It's amazing, Mark. It's amazing. So I think part of lean is it might feel unpleasant for some organizations, but there has to be a constant challenge. You're constantly challenging the process. How do you measure the process? How do you do the process? Should be a constant challenge.
John, another one, and I learned this from a friend over in Amsterdam. He calls some of these metrics watermelon KPIs. Green on the outside, red on the inside. And here's an example. Customer calls you up and says, hey, John, I want it on the 15th. And you tell me, the customer, well, Mark, we can't get it for you on the 15th, but we can get it for you on the 30th. Well, it's the best you can do. Okay, great. So you end up getting it to me on the 30th. You fulfill your commitment. You mark yourself green, but me as a customer, I'm marking you red. That's a watermelon KPI, because we're not putting ourselves in the seat of the customer. To your point about how we measure some of these other things, like kilograms or whatever else.
Oh, Mark, don't get me going on that one, because probably for the last 5 or 6 years of my career, what I had heartburn with is this whole notion of promise dates. The customer wants something. It's exactly what you described. They want it Wednesday, and you say, no, I can only get it to you Friday, and they put themselves green on the scorecard because they decided, this function decided by themselves, that they're going to measure to their promise dates.
Yeah.
How does that help the business?
Right.
Yep.
By the way, it's not just to give you the gravity of that, we had a client in, not a client, but we had a company in Danaher we acquired in England, and they were measured 95% to promise date on time delivery. Yep. When I made them go back, and one of the non-negotiables for DBS was you have to measure to request date. You can still measure the promise date if you want, but I'm going to ignore it. I'm not going to look at that. Okay. But you got to measure the request date. So our numbers are going to look bad if we do that. Oh, they're not going to look bad. They're already looking bad, except the customer is the one looking at it. Okay.
So,
and by the way, the gravity was this. They're 95% when I had them recalibrate it, came out to 30 to request date. 30.
Yep. Okay. And Mark, a lot of times what's behind that, I'll call it self-enrichment, and then I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. By the way, I have an episode on this particular topic, by the way. It's called To Measure to Request Date. Yeah. Anyway.
You know, maybe we talk about, because you made me think about, you measuring labor is a small piece of the pie in a lot of cases, not all, but in a lot of cases.
Right.
And it's measured because it's easy. So, Mark, maybe we talk about how easy it is to measure things. And let's correlate this to the sport of baseball. So sorry for, you know, people that aren't U.S. centric watching this. But baseball is a sport that I think the last time I thought about it, I think it had more metrics than any sport, more ways to measure. And so if something's easy to measure, the labor's easy to measure because you're paying people, they have to voucher their labor, you know, for a lot of reasons, it's easy to measure. What I've seen, things that are easy to measure tend to get measured whether you want them or not. And then instead of KPIs, you look at some of these shops that have Gemba boards, and instead of KPIs, it's just statistics. It's information and data up there that you cannot take action on. It won't help you at all, but people still feel compelled to measure it.
I think a lot of those statistics, which typically are lagging indicators, right?
Yeah.
Are put in place not to help benefit the customer, but to have that leader at that operating level justify himself to his boss.
Yep. I agree. 100%.
Right?
Yep. And then that leader can wow everybody with how many stats he or she can rattle off.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Right. Right.
Yeah, we had a saying, and now if you don't have a blameless environment, John, though, you're not going to do these things. And, you know, we had a saying at Danaher, we called it, we said, make it ugly, make it ugly. And when she, I can't do on time delivery to request it because my numbers are going to look bad. Yeah. And again, like I said, they're already bad. You're just not recognizing, the customer's the one that recognizes it.
That's right.
But if you don't have a blameless environment, you'll feel persecuted by putting up a low number. So you can't put up a low number unless the attitude is such that I'm going to look at that low number as an unbelievable opportunity to get better. Okay, the Japanese, when I worked over there several times, they looked at warranty, for example, as a treasure chest of opportunity to get better. Tell me who thinks about it that way here.
You need the blameless culture. So I think
Right.
we've all seen, like, a John Shook has a slide where he talks about you want to go from problem hiding to
Yes.
problem resolution. So this is a behavior that drives the problem hiding. As soon as you get beat up over a metric, it's happened to me before. My wife will tell you, working from home, I'd be on reviews, getting beat up for, hey, the lead time's 72 days. I know the target is 60. We're at 72. Here's what we're doing about it. And getting beat up for that, the next time it makes you think twice about how open you are with where you stand.
Yeah, and you'll somehow manipulate the numbers. I had one client that said, "Yeah, we're going to shoot for a 3-day lead time." All of a sudden, I found out, "Oh yeah, that 3-day lead time, we're only going to count certain products." Then, "Oh yeah, by the way, later on when they didn't hit it, they said, 'Oh yeah, and we're only going to count it to certain customers.'"
That's right. That's
Okay, you
right.
see how that worked? They were
Absolutely, Mark. Yep. So
so.
much of this is behavioral based, isn't it?
Oh, big time,
It's
big
just
time.
there's no getting around it. Yep. So I love what you say. I think the phrase that I latched onto was embrace the red. Embrace the red as an opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yep. I love
Absolutely.
that. And then so you think about the sport of baseball, where I think I Googled this and there's 121 statistics in baseball.
Wow.
You think about that, all these ways that you measure the athletes and the teams and everything that happens, the pitchers with an earned run average, batters with a slugging percentage, the number of RBIs. But Mark, isn't running a shop a lot like playing baseball? The statistics are one thing, but you're playing the game. So if you're on the shop floor and you're in the middle of production, there are certain things that are far more important than others to make your production move along, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think you made a good point when you and I talked offline that some of the statistics in baseball that get, calculated don't help the manager win a game.
Exactly, Mark. They use later and use elsewhere or for something else, but for that game. And so anybody on my former teams that are going to watch this, they'll know I use this analogy a lot, is when you're running production, that's like playing the game. You've got to understand what is important in the current time frame.
You just reminded me, I love baseball.
Yeah.
And
And the right team, of course.
the
Red
Boston Red
Sox.
Sox, yes, that's why that was a requirement for you to work with Lean
Of
Horizons, by the way.
course. Yep.
But speaking of Red Sox, let's talk about Ted Williams. This is
The best
before
ever.
computers, before computers, before all the stats and all that, right? Well, they had stats, of course, but okay, so here's another problem with metrics. You can attempt to optimize your metric and sub-optimize your team. So let's just take a major league hitter who's vying for a big contract, and he has to get his batting average up or number of home runs. If you have a guy on third base, with one out, and it's tied up in the bottom of the ninth. Let's say there's no outs, and bunting that guy home, okay, or just hitting a ground ball will score him and you'll win the game. Except for the guy that's up there is going to swing for the fences because he wants to generate, home runs for his contract. Chances are he strikes out or pops up and they lose the game. Okay.
That's right.
Now, Ted Williams broke his strike zone down into nine zones.
He did. Colored. Right.
Okay.
With
And he
dots, it
knew,
had colors. Right.
yeah, and he knew his batting average in each one and where he would hit
That's
the
right.
ball and how he
That's right.
would hit a ground ball, fly
That's
ball.
right.
And Ted Williams is such a team player.
Yep.
Regardless of the unbelievable statistics, he still manifested that if, let's say, there was a guy on first base and we had to get him over in a late game and get him into scoring position, and there were no outs or one out, let's say, or even two outs or one on one out. And he knew that if he had two strikes on him, but if a ball comes into the strike zone in the upper right-hand corner of the zone and the probability of him to ground out is like 80%, he would rather strike out and take the
Yep.
out and not get out of the inning with a double
That's
play.
right.
Okay? That's what kind of player Ted Williams was.
Yep.
He was a team player.
Isn't there such a correlation between sports and
Oh,
manufacturing?
in
So
life in
for
general.
people that maybe don't follow baseball, what Mark was describing is on the cover of Ted Williams' book called The Science of Hitting. And it's a rectangle with a strike zone. And you could see the dots on what his batting average is, depends on where the baseball goes. And Ted Williams was the last player to hit 400. So, how significant is that? If you hit 300, you're probably going to go to the Hall of Fame. And he retired when, Mark, in 1966, because I think Yastrzemski started in 67.
Yes, he did. Yes, Yastrzemski started, and maybe 66. By the way, Yastrzemski almost became a Yankee. They insulted him with a $100,000 contract. Wait a
No, I
minute.
can't hear you.
And his father said, "You're not playing for the Yankees," because he grew up in Long Island, potato farmer.
Did. He
"You're
did.
playing for the Red Sox." His father took him right to the Red Sox, and he told the Yankees to go screw. Yep,
That's
that's what
awesome.
happened.
So some people are watching this wondering why we're talking about this. But look, so when you're playing the game, there's things you absolutely have to pay attention to. Mark, you've been to a lot of factories in Japan, like I have. You don't see these Gemba boards. They're not over there. Right. Both
You don't
you and
see
I agree on that point.
kata.
Right.
You don't see, you know, Gemba boards to me sometimes are put up to show people that you're doing lean, and because the people who are running it just don't know what to do. So
Well
you got
said.
to put something
Well
visible
said.
up.
It's a show
Okay.
and tell. Well
Yeah.
said.
But there's no standard work. And I'm
Yep.
sorry, if you don't have standard work, John, in your factory, don't even begin to talk to me about lean. I heard I
You
at
don't
one
have
company,
lane.
one company told me, we did a Smet over here, we did all that, we did this, we did that. But there's no standard work.
Yep, that's right.
So
That's
why are
right.
you doing a Smet? Okay.
Yep.
You know, keeping the operator on tack time and prioritizing the reasons why that operator can't hit
It's the
that
leader's
tack
job.
time is all about how you figure out your future Kaizens. And you know, at the end of the day, 94 or 95% of the problems that you have are not operator problems, but we want to measure productivity. They're not operator problems, they're process problems.
Yeah.
So,
We
but who am
agree.
I, right? Yeah.
We agree. I think we hit all the bullets I had, Mark. This is a good conversation.
Yeah, I think so. I'm just trying to think a little bit more about baseball. You know, I know you remember Pat Tillman who got killed in Afghanistan.
What
He
football player?
left the Arizona Cardinals to join the military. He was a Ranger and he got killed by
Yep.
our own fire. It was our own friendly fire. Well, I know his I met his brother. He only lived a mile from me in Arizona, and his brother was a Ranger as well. He played minor league baseball for Cleveland. And he has a business that does statistics for baseball.
Oh, yep.
Now, and the weird statistics, not your standard batting average crap. Anybody can do that. He does
Yep.
the ones that say, you know, on Tuesday afternoon in Milwaukee, when it's 38 degrees and 58% humidity, nobody has hit a home run at 2:15 in the afternoon when the sun was shining. Okay.
Isn't that something?
I mean, that's the
Yeah.
kind of stats he,
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating, of course,
Yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah.
But that's the kind of stats he does, okay?
That's fine.
Has a whole business selling those stats.
Yes.
So.
Yes. There's a company in India that does it for sports like tennis. I see them advertised during tennis matches. Big business
I
for
may have
betting,
some,
for
yeah,
people that
for
place
betting,
bets,
yeah.
betting. Right.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. And it's funny because if anybody ever goes to a casino, and let's say you're playing roulette, and You put your number on 15 and it wins. Nobody will put the number on 15 again. However, the probability of getting to 15 is exactly the same
Exactly
as
the
any
same.
other number.
Yep. That's
Okay.
funny. That's funny.
There's so much superstition in casinos and all that. But John, this was awesome. You did a nice job on this. I didn't know there were 121 statistics, but that is a interesting statistic, by the way.
Yeah, I googled it actually
I
for this call. Yep.
think you missed my joke. Okay. But anyway. But then again, most people do miss my jokes.
I got it.
John, this was awesome. We could talk forever on this kind of stuff,
Yeah.
but
Yeah.
I want to get you back after you get back from your trip from Australia and have one on, maybe we'll title it, How Do You Define a Defect?
I love that one because you and I both agree the definition has to be far broader than anybody thinks it is.
No, I don't agree with that. I think it's only when products don't meet specification.
So, see, this will be an interesting dialogue.
No, you know I don't believe that.
I
So,
know. Yeah.
matter of fact,
Good.
what if your
Let's do it.
specification sucks, right?
Or if you don't have one.
That's even worse.
Right.
John, thanks a lot.
Good.
This was fun. This is
Thank you,
fun.
Mark.
Look, have a good trip.
Thanks.
Yep, and don't get bitten by any. Don't get into any boxing matches with kangaroos while you're over there.
I won't. I
You
won't.
know. All right. And
I'll
I know
talk to
what
you
you'll
later.
do if you do. So,
Yes, that's right. Take
okay,
care,
my
Mark.
friend.
Thank you.
You take care.
Okay,
Thank
bye.
you. Bye bye.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.